They call high blood pressure the silent killer for a reason. I've had a bunch of patients where their blood pressure is 220 over 120 and they're ready to pop a vessel in their head. They should have a headache like they couldn't believe or blurry vision, and they feel nothing.
This is True to Your Heart, lessons on living a healthy, hearty life, brought to you by Amarin.
Welcome back to True to Your Heart, the show where we discuss new ways of looking at your cardiovascular health with leading health and wellness experts. I'm your host, Ron Jaworski. And on today's episode, we're helping you make the resolution to care for your heart health. My first guest on today's show is Ron Ryder, Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine and Medical Director of Hamilton Cardiology Associates, ICANL, accredited nuclear cardiology lab, and chairman of the quality committee. He's with us today to discuss why cardiovascular disease is such an important issue, why decreasing risk is a question of lifestyle, and gives us his own recommendations. Today's show is all about simple and effective ways you can direct that energy into keeping your heart healthy. Welcome, Dr. Ryder. It's great to have you on the show. I'm really looking forward to this conversation with you. We've been making great strides in making many more people aware of heart disease and the ramifications that it causes in this country. So welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here. And Jaws, I couldn't think of a better guy to talk to it about. So I appreciate you having me on.
Well, somewhere down the road, we'll talk a little football, but right now the show is yours. So I'll just be the guy that'll ask the questions and move the discussion along. But I have found it kind of interesting that over the last couple of years, obviously, you know, there's been tremendous focus on the pandemic and coronavirus, and some people have forgotten about all the other disease, including heart disease. Why is it so important now that, you know, heart disease has been kind of brushed to the side, that we bring it to the forefront of this country?
Right. So you make a good point, because I saw in the last couple of years with COVID, people getting to the emergency room at end stage disease. They had stopped going to their doctors, stopped taking medications. And so the heart attack rate went up, not just here where I am around Philadelphia and Central Jersey, but across the nation. And it was because patients were not getting to see their doctors. They were running out of their medications. And then suddenly it would be too late. They'd show up by ambulance having a heart attack. The numbers definitely went up across the country. So we still know that heart disease is the number one killer of men and women by far in the country. So a lot of women, I talk to the women, I give lectures on this topic all the time, and they say, number one killer is breast cancer or ovarian cancer for women. Not even close. Number one killer for men and women is heart disease. Has remained that way for many years, unfortunately, so we still have to work on that. About 1 million people a year have heart attacks in this country. About 500,000 women, 500,000 men. And one out of three of them, that's their second heart attack. So they're coming back again with another episode, even though they had a first heart attack. So we have to do better in raising awareness, what we're trying to do with programs like yours, to say, what are your risk factors for heart disease? I'm healthy. I exercise. I'm eating right. And yet there it is with a heart attack. So every 36 seconds in this country, somebody dies from cardiovascular disease. And we need to do better to try and jump on top of these risk factors. So some of the major risk factors that your audience should be aware of: diabetes, by far number one risk factor for heart disease, cardiovascular disease. So 4 out of 5 diabetics, 80% of diabetics, they die from cardiovascular disease. That means rusty plumbing. That means stroke, heart attack, or they lose their pulse in their leg and have an amputation. So that's 4 out of 5 diabetics. Blood pressure. You can go out to any pharmacy now and get a blood pressure cuff. You need to check your blood pressure. Cholesterol, high triglycerides, smoking cigarettes, and family history. Those are the 5 major risk factors for heart disease. So when I'm looking at a patient coming in to see me in the office, I kind of start going through my head, all right, this guy is 50 years old. He's had diabetes for 10 years. He smokes a half a pack of cigarettes a day, has blood pressure. You know for sure there's something going on. You just have to go find it. So that's our job, is to raise awareness about these risk factors, get the patients to come in to see their doctor, do their testing, and look for that plaque, that blockage that they don't feel yet, but it's there until they know it's there. That's the problem.
Doctor, let me ask you about exercise. As a former professional athlete for 17 years, I was literally forced to stay in shape. It was my job to be conditioned, be in the best physical shape I could be in. As time goes on, you start gaining a little weight, you start doing less exercise. How important is the exercise, and what do you recommend for people listening to the podcast that they should get in daily, weekly, or monthly?
Right. So 100%, you're right about staying in shape. So let's say the three major risk factors, I call them the numbers risk factors. Know your numbers. That's what American Heart Association says. Know your numbers, your blood pressure numbers, your cholesterol number, your sugar number for diabetes. Know your numbers. So exercise that you touched on, aerobic exercise, has a huge benefit on all three of those. If you exercise, and they're talking about 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, that's what we're looking for. 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, and it's a cardio exercise. So get your heart rate going, whether it's a fast walk outside, whether it's a stationary bicycle, doing any classes at the gym, dancing classes, playing racquetball, whatever it might be, get your heart rate going and try and maintain a good workout for 30 minutes, 5 days a week. So your sugar numbers are going to go down. These muscles that we have, when we use them, they need sugar and triglycerides as fuel. So the more you exercise, your triglyceride numbers go down, your sugar numbers go down, your blood pressure numbers go down. Unfortunately, cholesterol is one of those things that it's kind of set in stone. When we get our blood work checked for cholesterol, 80 to 85% of those numbers are coming from your mom or dad. That's genetics. So I have a lot of patients come to see me because their cholesterol is 300 and they're being told by their doctor, you need to go on a statin. You need to go on a medication to lower your cholesterol. They come to me and say, is that true? Do I really need to do it? I exercise, I eat right, I eat healthy, and my numbers are still high. I said, blame your parents, blame your mom or dad. But that you can't really affect too much with the exercise. Triglycerides you can, sugar you can, blood pressure you can. Take an inch or two off your belt size. You're going to fight inflammation, get rid of stress. It's a huge thing to do. And you know what? When our knees start to go and our backs start to go and we can't do the treadmill or the bicycle, you find some other means. You try and swim in the pool. Any type of exercise you can go to get your heart rate going is going to lower your risk for heart disease, guaranteed.
You said it's very difficult to control cholesterol. A major part of it is hereditary. How does diet impact your cholesterol? And what foods do you recommend to our audience that they should be eating to control their cholesterol, particularly the bad cholesterol?
Right. So the bad cholesterol, Ron, that's the LDL. We like to try and get the LDL below 100. And if you have diabetes or any type of plaque at all, you want it below 70. So when someone comes into my office and let's say their LDL, the bad cholesterol, is 142, and their doctor said, I think you should be on a cholesterol medicine, I usually order a few tests to see whether that LDL, that waxy substance, the cholesterol that they're producing from the liver, is it sticking to their arteries anywhere without having to put a catheter inside them? Because try not to do that if we can avoid it. So two of the best tests to check for early plaque in your arteries years before you have symptoms, years before you flunk a stress test. One test called a coronary calcium score. It's a CAT scan x-ray. Takes 15 minutes. And multiple imaging centers across the country have this ability where you lay down on the CAT scan table. There's no injections, just the camera. And if that radiologist sees calcium on the outside of your heart arteries, that's hardening of the arteries. And that means you got plaque on the inside. It just can't tell you how much. But the higher your coronary artery calcium score number, from zero to as high as it goes, I have people with scores of 1,000, 2,000, 3,000. And these are people that have no symptoms of chest pain. They exercise, they pass their stress test. I say, you know what? You have family history for the heart, or your cholesterol is a little high. Go for this coronary calcium score, and it comes back 1,000. They can't believe that they have plaque already in their arteries. And that other test I recommend a lot is a carotid ultrasound, because the carotid arteries are right under our skin. You can do an ultrasound, you can see inside there, and right away you know that you have a problem. So those two tests are very valuable. And what you try and do is you try and continue to exercise and eat healthy, like the Mediterranean diet, those kind of diets to help with your cholesterol to lower it.
I've had the carotid artery test on a regular basis. I've never had the scan. I guess it'd be called a plaque scan. I guess that'd be a way to find the plaque. And I'm knocking on wood as I say that. I've been okay, but would you recommend that I get the plaque scan?
100% I would. I've ordered the scans for people in their 20s sometimes. It depends on how strong their family history is. We know that this atherosclerotic process can start at a very young age. We've seen fatty streaks in the coronary arteries as young as age 5. So if there is family history for heart disease, if you have any of the risk factors I mentioned, diabetes, smoking, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, getting a coronary calcium score, certainly even by the age of 40, is a good idea. Now, as we age, we typically are going to get hardening of the arteries. That's a term that's thrown around. This is calcium buildup on the outside of the arteries. And I guarantee you, wherever you have that calcium on the outside, you have plaque on the inside. So go get your coronary calcium score. You're going to get a number. And that number is going to be fit into a certain age profile for you. So is this age profile way too high than you should have for your age and your risk factors? Some people have scores of zero and they're in their 60s and 70s. But so many of my patients, they'll have scores where it's 100, 200, 400. And that really opens their eyes. And now they're saying, you know what? I think I am going to do what you told me to do. Go exercise or eat the Mediterranean diet or take my statin if I'm supposed to take my statin. Because you've shown me that I have plaque in my heart arteries that my stress test didn't tell me about, that I didn't know about. So, Ron, for you and for your friends that might have risk factors, a great idea.
You were talking a little bit earlier about blood pressure. And, you know, when I started doing this podcast for Amarin, obviously I was doing more research on myself and my health, as well as the opportunity to get healthier eating habits, structure in exercise. But the blood pressure was also very, very important. So I got the cuff and I take my blood pressure every day. I monitor that. So how important is it that everyone understands their numbers in regard to their blood pressure?
Right. So it's a major risk factor and it's something that we can do things about. Listen, again, I have some of my patients, bad genes from mom and dad. They're on 5 blood pressure pills and they exercise and they watch their salt and they don't drink too much alcohol. They're on 5 pills. That's what their genetics gave them. The bottom line in controlling these risk factors, these numbers, blood pressure number, cholesterol number, sugar numbers, they have to look pretty on paper. They have to look pretty on paper when you go to see your doctor. If you have to take 5 blood pressure pills to do it, 2 sugar pills and a cholesterol pill, whatever it takes. Now, if your genetics are not that bad and it's more your lifestyle and your lifestyle is affecting your blood pressure, well, you know what? Cut down on the salt or exercise a little bit or try and lose weight or cut back to have 1 drink a day instead of 3 or 4, whatever might be affecting the blood pressure. But blood pressure used to be borderline high anyway, 140 over 90. That was the borderline high blood pressure number. And a few years ago, we cut it down to 130 over 80. That's now the new borderline high blood pressure. So all you have to do is go out to one of these pharmacies, get yourself a blood pressure cuff that fits around your arm nicely, put batteries in it, hit the button, and a minute later you see your numbers. They call high blood pressure the silent killer for a reason. I've had a bunch of patients where their blood pressure is 220 over 120, and they're ready to pop a vessel in their head. They should have a headache like they couldn't believe or blurry vision, and they feel nothing. So the scary thing about blood pressure as a risk factor is you may feel no symptoms of it. But as soon as you get that cuff from your pharmacy, you go home and you check your first reading, and you see that it's elevated. That's a time to go in and see your doctor and say, let's discuss, why is my blood pressure high? If I'm doing all the right things and I'm eating healthy and watching my salt and I have 160 over 100, well, I guess I need a medication. I'd prefer not to, but I have to face the reality.
Well, I was 128 over 78 this morning, so I feel good.
That's nice, yeah.
I was a tad under the numbers that you said you need to be at to be concerned. But I do have a personal concern because about 6 months ago, I lost my brother, who's my older brother, 5 years older than I was, to a heart attack. And you've been talking pretty much throughout the show, and you mentioned heredity a number of times. What does that mean? Should I be more concerned? Yes. But knowing I had a brother that died of a heart attack, what can I do to help prevent that besides all the things I've been talking about?
I can relate, Ron, 100%. So first thing we talk about when we talk about family history is premature heart disease, premature. And what does that mean when we take a detailed history? Premature heart disease means a male in your family, 55 or younger, or a female 65 or younger who had a heart attack or died suddenly or some type of heart disease. So that's considered premature. As we age, hardening of the arteries is a common thing. So if you're 65, 70 years old and you have a heart attack, that doesn't count as premature and shouldn't be labeled as such as a risk to you being a family member and your brother. So he was 75 years old. My personal story, why I'm a cardiologist, is my father died at 48 from a heart attack, so that would count. That's premature, under 55. He was an ex-Marine, Korean War, a Philadelphia cop for 25 years, pack of cigarettes a day, and bacon and eggs every morning. And the typical Philadelphia cop mentality, nothing's going to hurt me. But his older brother died of a heart attack at age 31, my uncle. I never met him. So he knew about the family history already. And their father, my grandfather, they died at 50 of a heart attack. So you have the grandfather at 50. You have a brother at 31. He died at 48. So to me, now I'm 58 years old. I went into cardiology mainly for that reason, try to be preventative. But I was also given risk factors besides family history. My dad gave me a cholesterol of 270 total. That means my LDL, the bad cholesterol, was 180, 190. Triglycerides of 300. And I'd have my Philly cheesesteak every now and then, but I wasn't going crazy.
Like we all have, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So these were risk factors that genetics were given to me. So when I was, going through my fellowship training, I did some of it at Johns Hopkins in 1992. And there was a doctor there named Peter Kordovich. And he wrote a book at that time called Beyond Cholesterol. And this was back around 1991, 92. The first statin had come out in 1988. And a statin was Mevacor, lovastatin. It was found in nature. And it lowered your cholesterol. And after that, they synthesized them in the labs, Lipitor and Crestor, all these statins. And I told him my history. And he said, son, because I was young then to him, said, son, you're not going to make 50 unless you get on one of these newfangled statins. He was right because he understood the genetics involved, that if I didn't treat this and I couldn't treat it with diet and exercise, I was already doing some healthy things. So family history is an extremely important part of the history that we take and risk factors. And, you know, when it's there, there's no DNA right now with 23andMe and all these genetics to be able to say, guaranteed you got a healthy dose of those bad genes. We're not able to do that. So we just take the family history, and when it's there, make sure you check off the other things, the cholesterol, the blood pressure, the smoking, and then get in to see your doctor, get a stress test, get a calcium score, and whatever risk factors you need to get treated, you need to treat them down low. The numbers have to be low.
Dr. Ryder, I need one more piece of advice from you. I'm not a drinker. But every once in a while, when I'm on the golf course and I'm winning a match, I may light up a cigar. Tell me that's okay to have maybe one a week.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you that, Ron, 100%.
And all right. I got to have one vice, you know?
Yeah, and if you're losing, you might need two cigars. But it's absolutely not a problem. No. That, you know, when we talk about cigarettes and nicotine, that's a little bit different than lighting up that cigar. So, no, it sounds like you lead a very healthy lifestyle. You had to get where you were in life back then and continue to do it now. You lead a healthy lifestyle. You need to get this information out to people. And that's what you're doing through this podcast. It's a really great job of getting this information. What are your risk factors? So many people have heart disease, cardiovascular disease. They just don't know it yet because they haven't felt the chest pain cutting the lawn. They haven't slurred their words. They don't know the plaque is there. But we have the imaging techniques now to be able to see that plaque before they feel any symptoms and then do the right thing by them so they don't have to have that sudden cardiac death, that plaque rupture, the blood clot forms in minutes, and there's no warning. Jim Fix was a runner back in the 70s. He wrote this book about running and exercise. And surprisingly, as he was running out there one day, he had a heart attack and he died. And absolutely the same kind of situation we see with millions of people out there, that this plaque builds up and most of the heart attacks are caused by a 50% blockage or less when that plaque ruptures. So possibly even your brother might not have been having any symptoms necessarily of chest pain. We don't feel symptoms of chest pressure and angina from a blockage until a 70% block in the artery or more, 70%. So all these people with 50% blockages, they're flying under the radar. They're passing my stress test in the office with a regular treadmill stress test. They have no symptoms of angina. But if you went for that coronary calcium score, their score could be 400 or 1,000 or 2,000. And then something's going to click in my head and say, this doesn't make sense. And then I go a little further. I find a plaque. I get them on the right medicines. Stabilizing plaque and fighting inflammation is the buzzword in cardiology since about 2017. Inflammation causes plaque to build up and rupture without warning. So when you're doing the Mediterranean diet, when you're doing aerobic exercise, things like that are very, very anti-inflammatory. And eating meat, even though I love my meat, and eating sugar and being sedentary and gaining weight and diabetes and smoking cigarettes, that's all pro-inflammatory and really bad. So if you don't know you have plaque, you better go look for it and find it. Because if you're doing any of those things that are inflammatory and you have plaque, it's working on a plaque and it's like a time bomb. And when it ruptures and you form that clot in minutes, you better hope it doesn't close the artery off completely and you have time to get to help.
Well, Dr. Ryder, your insight, your information has been sensational. I can't thank you enough for educating me and our listening audience here on True to Your Heart podcast. Thank you so very much for your time.
You're most welcome, Charles, and it was great to talk to you. Have a good night.
Joining me now is Michael Chernow, entrepreneur and branding expert. He's the CEO and founder of Creatures of Habit, founder of Seymour's, and co-founder of The Meatball Shop in New York City. Michael's here today to tell us more about lifestyle choices to keep us heart healthy. Welcome, Michael. Great to have you on the show. It's going to be a fun show. I know you have a great resume, so it's really, really fun to have you talking about heart health. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me. Really excited to be here.
Now, what are some of the top recommendations for staying on top of your heart health?
I will say that, you know, you want to make sure that you're having enough omega-3 fatty acids in your nutritional plan on a regular basis. Omega-3 fatty acids, really, really good for heart health. Also, something that people don't really think enough about as being cardiovascular exercise, but to be totally fair, I think is probably one of the strongest uses of cardiovascular exercise is walking. Everybody thinks, oh, I've got to get on the bike, I've got to get on the treadmill, I've got to. And really, going outside and walking is one of the greatest things we can do for our heart health.
So, you know, people talk about medicine, different treatments. So, I mean, basically what you're going to recommend is get your exercise in.
Get your exercise in. Make sure you're walking. If you can put a target, you know, 5 days a week, try to hit 10,000 steps a day. That is going to really help support your heart health as well as the omega-3 fatty acids. I really do, you know, believe in omega-3 fatty acids for a number of reasons, but brain health, heart health, really, really strong.
When you think about diet, what comes to your mind first?
When I think about diet, what comes to my mind first? Well, I believe in the 80-20 rule, where 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, I am on a very strict, structured, regimented, I don't want to call it a diet, but nutrition lifestyle. I eat the same exact thing for breakfast every single day. I pretty much eat the same thing for lunch. And then my dinner is typically a wild card, some sort of protein, vegetables, some salad. And so I do that Monday through Friday. And Saturday and Sunday, I give myself a break. But that, I believe, is probably just about the healthiest way to walk through life. It's not about dieting. It's not about these fads. It's really about balancing out the way you have a relationship with food. And the easiest way, in my experience, to do it is to make Monday through Friday your strict days. And on the weekends, you know, a couple of meals, go for it. Have a good time. Enjoy yourself. The balance of life is really important. But ultimately, I really do. I have oatmeal for breakfast every single day. And that goes for the weekends too. I just love oatmeal. I actually launched a business that is all about oatmeal because of how much I love oatmeal, called Creatures of Habit. For lunch, I pretty much have a salad with some grilled or sous vide chicken breast every single day. I have a snack twice a day of rice cakes are like one of my favorite snacks. So I always have rice cakes on hand. And I always have really high quality jerky, like meat sticks. So I'll eat a meat stick and rice crackers, and they're satiating and they do the trick to get me from one meal to the next. And then for dinner, I always have some lean protein or a piece of fish, some salad and some veggies. And that's sort of like what I do on a regular basis. And like I said, it's always delicious. It always keeps me satiated. And I know that I'm winning. You know, I think what we can benefit from nutrition is not only that instant gratification when you eat something incredibly delicious, but when you know you're eating healthy food, the confidence building element of it really is a game changer. When you eat something healthy, it is an absolute win. You have won. You've done something for yourself that is a victory. You've won. And typically, once you get into the habit of making those nutritional wins, they lead to other great decisions throughout the day. Food is essential. We need food to survive. Our body does not produce it, so we need to get it from other resources, right? And so it's necessary. Our relationship to food is something that a lot of people struggle with.
doesn't eating the same thing every meal for 5 days, doesn't that get a little boring? And sometimes you have to like spice it up a bit.
You know what? For whatever reason, I mean, I'm also a chef, so I never sacrifice flavor. I always make it taste good.
You got an advantage. You're a chef.
Yeah, I always make it taste good. And the truth is, though, when I find something that I like, I am the quintessential creature of habit. If something is working for me, fulfilling my taste buds, it's also giving me that nutritional win, I don't feel the need to like eat so many different things. And then again, I have a couple of meals on the weekend that give me that awesome, like, yes, I love that, you know, that burger, you know, that slice of pizza, whatever it is that's going to make me feel like I also have that in my life, that I'm not depriving myself of that. But the relationship with food is something that a lot of us struggle with. And I know for sure that when you can find a few things that really work for you, that work with your gut microbiome, that don't make you feel bad after you eat them, stick with them and make them part of your life.
Are you an advocate of the Mediterranean diet when you do get after it on the weekend?
I really try not to stick to any of these specific diets because I feel like diets die hard. I'm a fan of resets, right? So like everybody talks about the ketogenic diet. Ketogenic diet for me is not a sustainable diet. It's very, very difficult to actually get into ketosis, but I love doing it for 4 to 6 weeks to completely reset my system. And so if I'm going to say I'm going to go on keto for 4 to 6 weeks, I am definitely going to lose some weight. It's not easy to do, so it's a challenge, but it's definitely going to make me sharper up top because I'm depleting the carbohydrates and I'm actually feeding my brain fat. The focus is intense. Another reset that I really like is the Whole 30. So the Whole 30 is a 30-day reset. And that's why I kind of like those types of diets that are for specific amounts of time. They help reset your whole entire system. And then you start to introduce new things back into your diet, into your meal plan.
I'll be the first to admit I like a cold beer every now and then. What is your position on abstinence from alcohol or limiting your alcohol consumption?
You know, I have a very strong opinion on that. this doesn't go for everybody, but you're talking to a recovering alcoholic. So I've been in recovery for 17 and a half years, right? And
well, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thank you. My wife drinks. All of my friends drink. I have no problem with alcohol for other people to consume. I would say this. If alcohol is interrupting success and happiness in your life, you should not drink. If alcohol is something that you use on an occasional basis, take the edge off, going out with friends, having a good time, and you're able to have a couple of beers, 3-4 drinks, and go home and wake up the next day and have no issues, by all means, enjoy. But alcohol is a real thing. And for me, it almost destroyed my life. And so because I got sober, I was able to really build a life beyond my wildest dreams when I put the plug in the jug. And that's just for me. I don't promote that for anybody who's not actually struggling with an alcohol problem.
Well, congratulations. I love the line, put the plug in the jug. That's a good line to people that don't know how to handle that alcohol. And said, I like a beer now and then, I like a glass of wine now and then, but I do wake up in the morning and feel pretty good about myself. So
yeah.
And congratulations. What you did is fantastic. You started out the show by talking about, you know, your exercise regimen and getting the blood flowing and getting the oxygen throughout your body. You know, what do you recommend for just, you know, a normal person? How much should they be working out every day? What would you tell them? Hey, do you have to get to the gym every day? You got to use weights. You got to do aerobic exercise. Is there a plan that you have that you would recommend?
Well, I will tell you this. For anybody listening that does not exercise at all, right? Let's start there. I said it earlier. The number one thing I try to convince people to get into the habit of doing just to get the blood flowing is going out and walking. Walking is something that is awesome for cardiovascular exercise, and people downplay it, but it actually is incredible cardiovascular exercise. It's also a mind, body, and spirit tool. Something about walking outside really does help benefit the whole entire system. And so I would just say, if exercise has been a hard thing for you to, you know, sink your teeth into, don't think about going to the gym and lifting weights and doing all that stuff. Just start by going out and taking a 10-minute walk and then add a couple of minutes every week. So 5 days a week, you take a 10-minute walk. Next week, you take a 12-minute walk. The next week, you take a 15-minute walk. Get up to a 45-minute walk a day. And before you know it, you're walking 7,000 steps, 8,000 steps. And you start to really begin to feel good. And so that's what I would say for someone who's just struggling, trying to get off the couch. For those who are a little bit more advanced, who are actually going to the gym, a lot of people say 3 to 4 days a week is the perfect amount of training to build muscle and to see advancement in fitness. I am a competitive athlete. So for me, I train 5-6 days a week. And that's because I'm always working on some sort of a fitness goal, fitness target, competition, whatever it is. But I would say 3 to 4 days a week, you work out. You know, strength training, resistance training is the absolute best thing anybody can do for physical fitness. It really is. Resistance training, especially as we get older, is scientifically proven to help build bone density, muscle growth, all those things that we want as we get older, because those things begin to deplete as we get older. Resistance training and strength training are essential for living a long, happy, healthy life.
I can tell you, I agree wholeheartedly with your comments, Michael, about the walking. You know, as I've gotten older, you know, for 17 years, I played pro football. So it was my job to stay in shape and work out. And I had, you know, all kinds of coaches and fitness gurus. And, you know, everyone's chewing your butt out to work harder. It was kind of easy at that time. As I got older, I started walking. And I'm an avid golfer. And I can tell you this, when I play golf, I'd say 75% of the time, I walk. And I'll get in 6 to 7 miles walking the golf course. So for those people that may, you know, not want to be a professional athlete but want to stay in shape, I would say take up golf and walk a little bit more. So
that's great. I mean, I love that.
It's basically what you said, get up and go for a walk.
That's yeah. It. I mean, you know, my mother, for instance, is 74 years old. And all I tell her to do, I say, Mom, if there's anything you can do for me as your son, just go out for a walk. When in doubt, go out for a walk.
Do you ever walk with her?
Unfortunately, we don't live close enough together. I would love to be able to go knock on her door every other day and say, we're going out, let's do it. But she's getting into the habit.
Let me throw one thought out. You know, I take my blood pressure literally every day. I try to do as many good things as I can for, you know, my heart health. And in doing this show, pretty much every person that I've talked to, we talked about salt and the impact of salt on heart health. What is your feeling, Michael?
You know, salt gets a really bad rap. Salt and cholesterol gets a really bad rap. And I'm a food expert. I've been in the food business for a very long time. I cannot make any claims about sodium, but I do know that being afraid of sodium is the wrong way to think about it. Oversalting food specifically can become an issue. So I like to use pink Himalayan salt. The sodium is far less. It actually, pink Himalayan salt has 84 vitamins and minerals in excess of regular table or kosher salt. So if anybody is, you know, on the fence about salt and sodium, I would just say go to pink Himalayan salt because it is a healthier option. And it also is lower on the sodium scale.
Where can you acquire that salt, the pink Himalayan salt? Is it pretty much available anywhere?
It's available anywhere. You could find it at most grocery stores across the country. It's not as salty, but it is mined in the Himalayas and I think Pakistan or Afghanistan. And it comes out of the earth. It's got 84 vitamins and minerals that the other salts that we're so used to don't have. And it's a pure salt. It's called like the pure salt. So I would just say anybody who's, you know, thinking about trying to change their salt game or has been afraid of sodium, introduce pink Himalayan salt. And that could potentially be an asset. But I would also say, obviously, check with your doctor or your healthcare provider before you make any decisions based on this conversation when it comes to sodium and heart health.
Well, that's very good advice, Michael. Thank you so much. Now we're going to come to what I consider the favorite part of the show, at least my favorite part anyway, the Mythbusters. And I get to throw a myth out to you, and you can tell me true or false or busted. Any way you want to go with it, here's the myth, and see if you can bust it. I know when I'm having a heart attack because I'll have chest pain.
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. When someone is having a heart attack, chest pain is definitely a symptom of that. So if you are having chest pain and it doesn't feel normal, I would absolutely call your doctor. But chest pain can be a whole slew of things. And so I wouldn't say that every time you get chest pain, it's a heart attack. But if you are getting chest pain, you might want to call a doctor.
Yeah, I would say, of course, chest pain and maybe shortness of breath, nausea, feeling lightheaded, pain, discomfort. When those things happen, that's you need to call dial 911.
Yeah, numbness in the left arm.
Exactly. Yeah. So we busted myth number one. Number two, I don't need to have my cholesterol checked until I'm middle-aged.
Myth. That is not true.
Busted.
Busted. You should always be on top of your cholesterol. Cholesterol is, in the 200s. You definitely want to get a hold of that.
Well, we got two busted for Michael Chernow. Michael, I can't thank you enough for joining me here on the show. We have a fantastic time, and thanks for your incredible insight. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Ron.
Thanks again to Dr. Ron Ryder and Michael Chernow for joining us on the show today. For more information on how you can be true to your heart, visit www.truetoyourheart.com. I'm Ron Jaworski. And this has been True to Your Heart, presented by Amarin.